Hello and welcome to season two of That Sports Merch podcast with your host Lee Hyde and your co-host Matt Hudson. It's an absolute pleasure to be back.
Yeah, really looking forward to season two. Some exciting times to come. 2024 looks to be a really exciting year.
Yeah, absolutely. Loads teed up, which is really good. Flying out the blocks with a new episode. We've got loads of great guests lined up, loads of interesting coming on and joining us on the podcast, which is really encouraging. And I'm sure that we're going to be bringing some unique content to the listeners who've enjoyed season one.
Yeah, I think season one was a great venture into this world, wasn't it? And we've learned plenty in that time. I think it tees up an even stronger season two. As you say, some great guests already in the bag, and the door's very much open for anyone else who might want to get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Do reach out if you do want to. Exciting times as well, Matt. We've got a podcast sponsor.
We have. Kind of shows you must be doing something right, you know. It's great to see that from speaking to the guys at Streaker Sports, they had really enjoyed season one. The content had really resonated with them. And yeah, we're absolutely delighted to have them on board.
It's an absolute pleasure to be working with Pete and Corey from Streaker Sports, official podcast sponsor of That Sports Merch podcast. And really looking forward to collaborating with them as we go.
Yeah, from what we've heard and sort of spoken to them so far about, they've got some really exciting plans themselves for 2024. So
yeah, indeed. For anybody that wants to kind of have a look at what Streaker Sports do, they create unique heritage-inspired apparel, which really celebrates the culture of sports. They are based in the US and they've just got some phenomenal product on their website. So have a look at streakersports.com. I'm sure there'll be something for every one of you out there. I mean, I'd spent hours just looking through all of the licenses and all of the defunct league products that they've got. It's quite something, and there's some spectacular club names in there from the 60s, 70s, 80s as well. So it's a lot of fun to look over their website and have a look at their fantastic product. But we'll hear more from those guys, as Matt alludes to, during season two.
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, I'll be definitely keeping some Christmas money safe. Get on their website and be buying myself some product, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. There's a few things on my hit list as well. So diving into episode one, season two, we speak to Robbie Sarton, who is head of product for Nick Auditore Represents. For those of you who don't know Nick Auditore, they are a business based in Australia, looking after Australia and New Zealand. They manage a number of licenses across multiple sports leagues, predominantly with the Mitchell and Ness license. And it's a really interesting chat that we have with Robbie with regards to his role as head of product, his career to date, and some insight into how the product licenses are managed and how the new range plans come together for what is essentially a nostalgia heritage lifestyle collection. So without further ado, let's jump straight in. But first, let's hear from our official podcast sponsor, StreakerSports.com.
StreakerSports.com is the proud sponsor of That Sports Merch podcast. Bringing creative collaborations, we're the home of unique, heritage-inspired apparel celebrating the culture of sports. Our licensed collections include iconic brands such as Peanuts, Wiffle Ball, and Zamboni. Organizations like USA Hockey and USA Lacrosse. Sports personalities like Dick Vitale and Bill Raftery, as well as 40-plus colleges and universities. Our defunct league collections revive forgotten professional sports leagues of years past, bringing some incredible logos back to life. Check us out at StreakerSports.com. And for a limited time, only for That Sports Merch podcast listeners, use the checkout code SPORTSMERCH15 to get 15% off site-wide. StreakerSports.com.
Robbie, thanks so much for giving up your time. I really appreciate you joining us from the other side of the world. Our listeners like to kind of understand the role that you're in and how you kind of got to that role today. Do you want to give us a little brief background in terms of kind of working your way to Nick Auditore?
Yeah, no problem, Lee. Thanks for inviting me on to the show. And yeah, just to kick off, I was working in the wholesale background and I worked for a few known brands out in the industry, Hugo Boss, Gant, Fossil. And, in my journey, I found myself over in Australia and eventually landed up in Nick's office, and he presented me a job in product. And, you know, Nick's business has grown substantially from the time when I joined the company, maybe from around 10 to 11 employees up to now 90 plus employees, plus international employees that it has on the books as well. So been amazing to see the scale of the business grow over the years. And, you know, just the time spent within licensing has given me kind of really open eyes to, you know, the industry and what it's about and the mechanisms that it takes to create products and merchandise to put out to the general public.
Yeah, amazing. And for those that maybe haven't heard of Nick Auditore Represents, can you just give us a little bit of background in terms of what they do, the licenses that, that you guys hold and your kind of distribution channels?
Yeah, no worries. So my my boss who runs the company is Nick Auditore, and he started the business 11, 12 years ago. And his first foray into bringing brands into Australia was Mitchell & Ness.
Nice.
So he got in about 5,000 units of headwear and he signed the deal with them and then started distributing. And one of his first retail partners was Culture Kings, which is now one of our major retailers within the ANZ market.
Amazing.
And then from that point, he you know, added on more brands, more licensing. We ended up doing business with Fanatics, you know, and they have a major role to play in the licensing game worldwide. And through that, you know, we got brands on like Nike, Majestic, which is used to be the old MLB license, on-field license partner.
Yeah, sure.
So we have that deal. We have Mitchell & Ness. And then, you know, throughout the years, we've added on extra licenses. So NASCAR, we've added on NCAA schools. We've signed major deals now locally with the AFL and the NRL.
Okay.
To name a few of the licenses and brands that we do. Yeah, it's been an incredible growth journey and it continues, you know, as we go on.
It's all built from 5,000 units of headwear.
Correct. Correct.
You look back to that now as quite a small acorn that it's all grown.
Yeah, from. He would. Yeah. I've probably been in the business for about 6 years now.
Nice. And you mentioned there you're building out the licenses, you're building out the team. You're scaling at pace for what is, you know, still a relatively young business, you know, well established, but young. You mentioned the team's getting up to kind of 90, 100 now. I mean, that's some investment and some kind of brand building over 10, 11 years.
100%. And I think the things with building a business, you learn, you pivot, you know, and you grow as you learn, you know, and I think that's kind of what the business has done over the years. It's just added these, you know, opportunities, and with the opportunities case sales revenue came the addition for more infrastructure, warehouse, costing, offices, everything that aligns to it, you know, so.
Oh, amazing. And is there plans to invest in new brand licenses? Are you always looking at new opportunities?
They're always looking around, yeah, for sure. You know, and it depends on, you know, if it's the right opportunity for the company. You know, we've really kind of focused on licensing and sport.
Sure.
You know, that's the major focus, you know, with a fashion twist within that. So, and it's still the key focus and the strategy of the company.
Absolutely. That heritage lifestyle fit just works so well in loads of territories now. And I know that that's a massive part, obviously, with Mitchell & Ness on board in terms of what you do in ANZ. In terms of your role in the business, I mean, congratulations. I saw that you recently had an internal promotion up to head of product. I think when we first started talking, you were working the product line manager role, heavily kind of focused on the Mitchell & Ness brand. Is it an impossible question to ask you what a typical day is, what your day-to-day role is and what responsibilities fall within that? I guess they've changed quite recently.
Yeah, there can be lots of things that we could start on. We could be ideating projects for, you know, future seasons. We could be dealing with current seasons with local production. We're dealing with our kind of licensee partners, whether it's brand or it's actually direct with the league. So Mitchell & Ness is a great example of something that that's a brand that I've looked after for 6 years. And it's been, you know, amazing to see them getting new league deals every year. You know, I think we started off with NBA, NFL, MLS, and then we grew with MLB, and then we added on AFL, or we added on NRL, you know, and, you know, all of these leagues have different approval processes and nuances that you kind of have to go through every day. So you're directly dealing with league. Even the way that we build the products, you know, we have kind of strategies and things like that where we have a product strategy, the sales have a sales strategy, and then we go to market. So we're really aligned of, you know, what we're actually bringing to life with the end consumer through our kind of retailer lens, through our brand lens. So that's just to name a few parts of the week that, you know, could play out. You know, for our listeners out there, like who are really interested, you know, like leagues, you know, we can create a graphic and then that has to go through an approval process. And then there's someone there within the league licensee partner that actually goes and approves this on a portal. And then once that's approved, then obviously we can go and manufacture that product. You know, but during that process, there could be lots of stages where the league might not approve something because it doesn't adhere to their brand principles. We might get a brief from a retailer and we might not adhere to it because it's not our brand principles. So there's lots of kind of fluid conversations and product cycle that has to go through before our end consumer actually sees, picks up and purchases the product.
Yeah, I guess people won't really understand that or won't appreciate the level of approval process that you sometimes have to kind of jump through to get products to market. It sounds like, you know, you're working with the leagues, you're working with the brand, you're working with individual club IPs within leagues as well. You're working with the retailer who wants a certain fit for their collections. So yeah, you're almost doing like a hurdles race. You know, you're trying to get over all of them before you get to the finish line.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really interesting. I think, you know, when you, if you've not too sure with your previous people you've had on the podcast, you know, whether or not they're in design, you know, being in the product function, we're like the cog. We're like one of the cogs where we go and speak to every single department, the costings for, you know, production. We go and deal with league approvals. We go and deal with sales. We go and deal with marketing. We're dealing with finance, you know. So, you know, our touch point really, to be honest, we're the start of the ideation, you know, all the way through to the finishing line, you know. So, you know, the stages that it takes and the conversations to be had to, for our, you know, the most important thing at the end, brand related wise, is that you have that feeling that the consumer is happy with what they've seen.
Yeah.
You know, and it can come down to the quality, the graphic, the league. We spend a lot of time on consumer muses and customer segmentation.
Sure.
So it's really important that even out into our retailer partners that they have clear differentiation between what you might find in, for our US listeners, could be Dick's Sporting Goods, or for Australia listeners, you know, our Rebel Sport. There's product you might find in there, but there might be product that you won't find that they have that would be in Culture Kings or, you know, maybe JD Sports. You know, we do a lot of work around segmentation and consumer journey. So within that kind of touch points within the shopping mall, you'll always have different types of product that maybe the consumer might purchase through the brand, but through that retailer. So do a lot of work there as well, you know.
Is that driven by you guys, or is that kind of working out what the consumer profile wants, or is that driven by the retailers pushing that feedback back into
you? It's driven by a lot of brands, actually. You know, Nike and Adidas, you know, they segment quite heavily just so there's room to breathe within all the channels that they might have. So Nike, you know, could have an example where they might release a sneaker to one of the sporting stores, but you won't find that sneaker in, you know, Urban Outfitters or your tier 10 shoes. So, you know, it's all about segmentation and the highs and lows of where you can purchase the product on the pyramid.
Sure. And touching on the Mitchell & Ness brand, obviously you mentioned that that's a brand that you've looked after for 6 years. I mean, most of our listeners will, you know, will understand the Mitchell & Ness brand, will know who that brand is, nostalgia, heritage, lifestyle. You're working there with predominantly non-ANZ brands and IPs in terms of the club licenses and the IPs that you're putting out, the graphics that you're putting out, the teams that you represent. Is that difficult to sell in a territory that doesn't have that club playing domestically, if that makes sense? Or
it's a great question, you know, and again, you know, it goes to international kind of consumer muses, you know. If you're, you know, sitting there in the UK or you're from Australia and, you know, you can think about how you might feel about American sport. Well, you know, then I probably would pose the question that you might not be team specific. You could be,
yeah,
but you might just like to wear that look because it feels like it's fashion. Whether or not it's an NCAA collegiate lockup look and feel, could feel like Tommy Ralph Lauren, but you're cool that it says Harvard, but you've never been to Harvard. That could be a great example of you, you know, really just liking the look and feel of, you know, that collegiate look. That could be an example. We have some really great examples of actually, depending on the sport and how diehard the sport is, we've got some true examples. If you're from the UK, you might have a team and you might stick with your team, and that is it. You don't move from your team. But in basketball, we've got some great examples where you've got LeBron James might move to the LA Lakers, and then we ended up with thousands of units of Cavs stock, you know, because actually they're playing they're following the player, but they're not following the team, you know. And you could probably have that circumstance even now at the moment, which is very relatable, where we've had a license in ANZ with MLS for 6 years. And unfortunately, we have tried to sell MLS, but we've never sold MLS. Yeah. It's not got that international reach. But now we're selling MLS. And I'd pose the question, what team do you think we're selling in MLS?
Could it be some pink shirts, could it, by any chance?
And some pink shirts, exactly. So with Messi going there, you know, all of a sudden there's some want and thirst for the product, you know, which, you know, you've obviously got, you know, one of the greatest players of all time. Iconic. So, and they're the small little things that can really pivot, you know, like got an interesting one at the moment where we're doing name and number lockups on t-shirts for Kelsey, who there's this effect there that, you know, it's really in the moment. It's right now and it's happening, and it's with Taylor Swift, and all of a sudden he was internationally known, but now he's even more internationally known, and we're getting asked for his product, you know. And they're the type of things that you kind of pivot on. You can't always. With offshore, you know, sometimes it can be 6 to 9 months before you see something, but you can react locally if you can print something or screen print something locally as well, you know. So you try and pivot both ways to kind of, you know, actually get into that consumer feeling around wanting that product right now, because that can, the consumer can move on super quick.
Absolutely. You know? I mean, that kind of throws up a couple of things, really. It's, I think, you know, Gen Z are changing it up massively in terms of the way that they, you know, consume their content. And that kind of plays out to what you touched on there about following the athlete rather than the club. I mean, Ronaldo to Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia, you know, how many yellow Al Nassr shirts did you see before Ronaldo went out there? And now all the kids want them. You know, Messi to into Miami is the same. And I think that's going to be a trend shift over the next 5-10 years, where it almost is fashion, lifestyle and athlete rather than club and single club mentality. I think the younger consumer and the kind of young trendsetters are following brands, they're following athletes, they're not particularly loyal, you know, and it's just changing the face of, you know, retailing product. The other thing is there, you mentioned about Kelsey, and I guess what we would define as hot markets, you know, opportunities that are right there in front of you to kind of retail product, turn it around quickly and retail it. In terms of NAR, obviously Mitchell and Ness being a very much heritage lifestyle brand, does that hot market silo work with Mitchell and Ness, or do you need to kind of push that through a different kind of brand and distribution channel?
Perfect. Exactly what we do. We try and stay true to what the brand is. You know, we're a nostalgic brand, so we celebrate moments in times or anniversaries from 15, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. Obviously, retired players associations through our swingman jerseys, stories and moments in time, whether or not it's the Bulls, 6-time champs or 3 rings, you know, back-to-backs, you know, that type of thing. And, you know, the beauty of the licensee partners that we deal with is that we can pivot around on the license accordingly to where we want it. So that type of opportunity of hot market that went under our NFL license that we have via the Fanatics agreement.
Sure.
But we would not put that in our current agreement, obviously, with Mitchell and Ness, because it's nostalgic and we don't actually have rights through that brand.
Yeah.
So even the licensee partners try and do that, you know, in the market. They might have family channel partners they might work with. They might have premium boutique brands they might work with. So they want the highs and lows of the product in the market as well. Often you've got the head of licensing who would sign the deals for their leagues, and their job is to, obviously get as much revenue and royalty out of their markets or territories that they're looking after.
Yes.
So they're always looking at the highs and lows of the product, right? So NFL is a good example. They might sign, and NBA and other licensee partners, they might sign a deal with a Kmart or a Target.
Yeah.
But that product might look quite basic and it's maybe not of great quality, but then there's could be a $30 tee. Then they might go up to another brand where they might sell that and sign a license deal with them, and that might be a $50 tee. Then they might go higher, and then they go Mitchell & Ness, and then that's a $70 tee. So even they're structuring their license deals as well, when they go out into market.
Yeah, they've got pricing caps on their markets, and they know what their consumers are looking for. So
yeah,
in terms of the kind of design and the freedom that you get within licenses, I guess Mitchell & Ness is a perfect example. How does that sit with the design teams? Do you need to follow, are you hard and fast in terms of Mitchell & Ness brand DNA? Do you get freedom within that?
100%. Got a lens with, especially with Mitchell & Ness, where there is a design handle that we like. We call it like the red thread, our consumers are really comfortable with what they're always seeing from the brand. I think that's really important. I think amazing, great international brands do that well.
Yeah,
I think people know when it's Nike or it's Adidas, they know it's Nike and Adidas, yeah. And we're no different. Now, we do have different buckets within Mitchell & Ness where you might have your nostalgic product or your swingman product, and that might be aligned to a storytelling moment. Right now we have a LeBron James jersey releasing for Cavs 2016. Nice. So we're going to celebrate that moment in time. We're going to release that. But then, that's really about that moment in time. We'll do some amazing hype reels, videos around that when we release that jersey. Even though he's at the Lakers, obviously we'll still get huge buy-in from their consumers from that. But then we can shift and we're like, what is trend product? Now you've got channels that you've got to service that might look and feel a little bit different to what you would say would be the DNA product of a brand.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be hypothetically where you might use different lockups or different graphic approaches that aren't usual to what you're seeing maybe when you go to the stadium or, your traditional kind of team apparel merchandise.
Sure.
And, that might be, could be doing, celebrating something where it'd be a trend color, your most up-to-date WGSN trend color in the market.
Yeah.
And then, but that's on using, say, hypothetically a green base, but for Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, yeah.
Not everyone's always used to seeing that green base on Chicago Bulls, but that's the fashion twist on doing something where you're using an iconic brand, but you also having that disposition of putting fashion product into market that differentiates just from fan wear. So I think there's a lot of examples at the moment where a lot of big brands or even small boutique brands like Kith, Kith's a great example where he's doing some great cross collabs with his local New York teams, whether or not it be New York Jets or Giants or, and that's a super elevated product. And, it's nice and clean, but it's his aesthetics, but still feels like it's premium product.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Amy Leon Dior, they've done some collabs with Mitchell & Ness. They feel like Mitchell & Ness, but they're Amy Leon Dior, we've done some amazing collabs with Mastermind. And, the list continues with the collab product that we deal with at the higher end of the market. That's an amazing product to have, right, when you're in a brand, because that is just called the halo effect. Your consumers, looking at all this shiny stuff that really is really expensive and they might buy or they might not buy, but then the halo effect just comes down because they'll access something else from the brand based on that. I've got this t-shirt at the moment. We did the Fendi collab with, you know, Rihanna and her team for the NFL Super Bowl, you know.
Yes.
You know, they're, as you said, hot market, quick to market opportunities to kind of celebrate a moment in time as well. But, you know, still look and feel like a nostalgic 90s graphic, but, you know, done in the Mitchell-ness way, you know.
We'll be right back with the interview after this quick ad from our official podcast sponsors, Streaker Sports.
StreakerSports.com is the proud sponsor of That Sports Merch Podcast. Bringing creative collaborations, we're the home of unique, heritage-inspired apparel celebrating the culture of sports. Our licensed collections include iconic brands such as Peanuts, Wiffle Ball, and Zamboni. Organizations like USA Hockey and USA Lacrosse. Sports personalities like Dick Vitale and Bill Raftery, as well as 40-plus colleges and universities. Our defunct league collections revive forgotten professional sports leagues of years past, bringing some incredible logos back to life. Check us out at StreakerSports.com. And for a limited time, only for That Sports Merch Podcast listeners, use the checkout code SPORTSMERCH15 to get 15% off site-wide. StreakerSports.com.
But, you know, done in the Mitchell-ness way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously your guys there, you know, your product teams, your designers, you're designing and getting approvals for the ANZ markets. Does it happen where, you know, you'll push that back to the brand and they'll actually, they'll recognize that design and that great product style and then push that into the US market? I guess that's when you know that your brand team have knocked it out of the park. If, you know, they want to then put a design or a, you know, design that was kind of pitched for the ANZ market back into the US when you're designing realistically US IPs anyway.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great question. And probably over the years, I think if you are looking at local market, I think sometimes the clubs might not realize they do know the enormity. These are billion-dollar brands. You know, New York Yankees is a billion-dollar brand internationally. Yeah. You know, like that logo's as iconic as Coca-Cola, you know.
Sure.
But I think there is a lens maybe in, it depends on how different the markets are. You know, the market in US, you know, it's very competitive, could be quite price-pointed. But then you step outside of the US and all of a sudden you don't have a lot of that competition, right? Because as you said at the beginning of the session, you know, the teams don't play there.
Sure.
So, you know, it's more about the eyes looking in internationally via that lens.
Yeah.
But that's where the opportunity lied, you know. But I think, you know, from ANZ and from Nick's business, you know, we saw it as an opportunity to always push the design boundaries. And often what's happened is that they've integrated our designs back into their local market. We were very lucky because we had a lifestyle retailer called Culture Kings that have now gone international.
Sure.
They had a very big international presence and they got sold about 2 years ago. And they were a massive marketing vehicle to go and push US sports back into the US.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in the end, there was a lot of requests from the US to ask about, can we get our product? Can we get this product? There was other retailers in the US saying, we need this product that was designed in Australia, but American mm-hmm. sports back into the US. And that's still happening today at this moment. Now, I think that's probably to do with the fact that that retailer is a disruptor. And they were a marketeer.
Yeah.
They were a marketing company and they knew, you know, TikTok and they were in front. And maybe, you know, sometimes these retailers, you know, you might have 1,500 stores or you might be Dick's or you might be Lids Hat Club, but maybe they just didn't see the lens as the way that we saw the lens of these big brands and what they could be.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where we've had inroads, you know, a lot of inroads with, you know, our products, you know, being wanted back into the US, you know.
I mean, that's got to be a buzz, right? Selling US IP products from an Australia, New Zealand territory back into the US.
Yeah. We had a fantastic example. Literally, only 4 weeks ago, they took NHL on the road. They did a NHL game out of season in Australia.
Okay, nice.
And we had, it was the LA Kings versus Arizona Coyotes. And the players went into Culture Kings. And we did loads of Mitchell & Ness nostalgic. We did a Gretzky range, basically, an LA Kings Gretzky range.
Nice.
And the feedback was all the players, they purchased with their own money the Mitchell & Ness Gretzky range, which is a range that we designed, you know, with a 90s nostalgic spin here in Australia. which is saying, like, what is the opportunity back in to America? Because, you know, like, people often forget, you know, like, you might be a player, a professional player, but there is no doubt that you were inspired in some way by some player. Obviously, Gretzky being a GOAT, right? So, and we had someone in from the LA Rams a couple of weeks ago. Apparently, the same thing happened, just buying merchandise, Mitchell and Ness merchandise, whether it was Sonics t-shirts and things like that. You know, it's just really good. It's like a good feeling, you know, because, you know, the most important thing is that, you know, I love products and love that consumer feeling, love bringing it to life. And it's the end of the cycle when you see something on Instagram or you see purchases online or you see sell-through reports and you think the line that you've built, it was worth it, you know?
Yeah, I think that nostalgia piece speaks for itself. It never goes out of fashion. It never goes out of date. I would wear retro jerseys of the England 90s team, you know, a Gascoigne or a Gazza or a John Barnes or that kind of thing. So like you say, those pros have grown up idolizing the, you know, the kings of their sports, the goats of their sports. Imagine the 8, 9, 10-year-olds now watching Messi and Ronaldo. You'll still be selling Messi and Ronaldo jerseys in 30, 40 years.
100%. That's one of the beauties about the brand. Really, when I think about the brand and working on the brand for so long, it's actually an endless cycle. Right now, when I started on there 6 years ago, you know, LeBron was in his prime.
Yeah.
Now he's going to retire and we can celebrate that moments for years and years to come, you know. LaMelo's just retired. We can celebrate that with a jersey. Brady's going to retire. We're going to hopefully get a license and get that deal and celebrate that moment in time, you know. And, you know, really when you think about it right now, like every weekend we're witnessing future history, you know, and then we can bring that to life via the brand. And the beautiful thing about the potential of the brand is that we can do this for every league in every country all around the world. It doesn't have to be just for the big league. There's iconic leagues in countries, you know, our listeners out there, you know, that in the US and the UK, you know, they don't know anything about the AFL. They might not know.
Sure.
But now we're doing that version nostalgic for the AFL. We're like breaking ground. We're signing contracts with retired players who are not part of retired player associations. We're bringing graphics back from the 90s. We're celebrating 150-year anniversaries, you know, like we're storytelling from back to back. That's just one league in one country, you know. There's hundreds of leagues.
Yeah, scale that up.
You know, there's hundreds of leagues that are 100 years old, you know, that actually, you know, they're local leagues that they're hugely popular in their own right in their local markets, but not international, you know?
Yeah.
So, and we've seen heaps of opportunity, Aaron, from NRL and AFL, you know, like it's a space that we're super excited about.
And in terms of, you touched on there, there's, you know, athlete collabs from certain sports and, you know, guys who probably aren't used to being approached to say, hey, you know, back in the day you were smashing it. Can we do some product based around you? How does that work? And does that kind of feed into, again, part of that product development cycle and identifying those opportunities? You know, is that something that you do as part of your team? How would you go about finding players, specific players from back in the day that you want to collab with?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give the example of our local sport, you know, AFL. I think our first touch point is to go and touch base with the club. Mm-hmm. Nothing's more authentic than the club, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because that's where things start. So we touch base with them, you know, they've got merchandisers, planners, retail buyers, etc. You know, and then we propose what, you know, we discuss ideation and maybe what they might want to see or what their diehard fans might want to see. Kind of a good example is we did Collingwood, which is, for anyone out there who doesn't know Collingwood, they're like the Man United of AFL. They're one of the biggest clubs. They've got the biggest supporter fan base. We did a collection with them called the 1990 Collie Wobbles.
Right.
You know, so they always kind of lost out and, you know, this was the moment they finally won. And, you know, we put a range together and, you know, you have to work with the club. You have to work with the players who are retired that you'll have to sign them onto a contract where you might have to give them some type of royalty.
Yeah.
And then you're giving the royalty back to Mitchell and Ness. You're giving the royalty back to AFL, the club. You know, there's a lot of things that have to go into royalties and that ends up being the purchase price for the consumer.
Yeah.
So the consumer might be like, oh my God, why am I paying X amount for this t-shirt? But it's like, there's many hands dipped in this t-shirt before you can get your hands on the t-shirt, you know? And that's just part of the game of licensing and royalty reporting and signing, you know, IP and players and things like that. There's extensive things sometimes when there can be, on a design, there can be 4 to 5 royalties getting paid out. Good one is Slam Magazine. You pay, we have to pay the player IP. We have to pay Slam Magazine IP. Then we have to pay the NBA. Then we have to pay Mitchell and Ness. And then eventually we get to the t-shirt, you know? So, you know, like, you know, there's highs and lows in the product. But yeah, going back to kind of AFL, you know, like we launched that range with the Collingwood range with the club, with our D2C, and we sold everything out within 48 hours.
Amazing.
And there was X amount of sales and revenue, and, you know, there were thousands of units sold. And a lot of that is hype, tease, promotion, you know, obviously big fan bases, working with maybe players, you know, and putting merchandise on players. All of that attributes to the success of how you go to market, you know, how the consumer, you know, sees the product, you know.
And have you ever had any particular difficulties trying to find a retired player? I imagine these guys kind of go out of the limelight and, you know, go off to a quiet lifestyle hidden away.
Yeah, I mean, like for these domestic leagues, for sure. I mean, I've got some really great examples even lately, you know. You know, we used to have a lot of retired players in NBA. And I think, you know, they used to be part of the Retired Players Association.
Sure.
Now, some of them have either renegotiated their deals with Retired Players Association to go and get some more royalty payments.
Yeah.
Some of them have left. And then that means that they have their own image rights and asset rights. And then now you've got this new one called MBPA, which is basically the current players. They've realized, hey, do you know what? The IP is the NBA IP, but I'm also the IP. I'm my own IP. So I'm going to use my own IP. I'm going to now sign with this MBPA, which is like more the modern version of the retired associations agreements that some of the 90s and the 80s players are on.
Sure.
You know, which is fair enough. I think it's about how they negotiate that and the value of what you see yourself as a brand. Now everyone's a brand. You're a brand, Lee.
Yeah.
I'm brand, you know, so.
Yeah, no, it's everybody's got their own value. I mean, the NIL stuff for the collegiate athletes is just massive at the minute, isn't it? It's only growing in
terms of. You know, they had nothing. I mean, I've got some great examples of that. Again, Australia being one of the disruptors there, you know, the NBL. We're bringing over players. We had LaMelo Ball play in the NBL. We had a couple of the other, you know, NBA players that currently play in that league that played in our local league. And instead of going to the draft, they played in that league and then they got picked up on contracts after that. So they've missed the draft completely, you know. And I think that was a time when maybe the NCAA league realized, hey, do you know what? We're going to lose our assets if we don't start providing them the opportunity to do these NIL programs, you know?
Yeah.
They had a lot of people that were just leaving, could go to Europe and Australia, play, and then still get picked up by the NBA. There was no need to go to high school.
So the whole driver for that, for them coming away from their usual structure, shall we say, was so that they could maximize their own personal brand and their own
image. 100%.
Yeah,
100%.
They were just not getting anything. I guess, you know, we can't have a conversation about nostalgia, heritage and image rights without talking about one of the phenomenons of basketball, Michael Jordan. Obviously, recently we've had The Last Dance 2020. I think that came out. We've had the Air film 2023. How close to reality do those kind of play out? I mean, you know, I get the feeling that you kind of might be like a real life kind of Sonny Vaccaro back in the early Nike days.
Oh, I hope so. I wish. I wouldn't say that. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, there's definitely... it's amazing to see your product come to life, you know, like obviously as a brand, you know, Mitchell & Ness, we've got the Jordan deal. You know, Jordan doesn't go and sign deals outside of Nike often,
yeah, of course.
You know, unless he's, you know, long-term partnership deals. So to make his authentic jersey, very expensive, but it's authentic to the brand. So we continue to do Jordan jerseys. We don't have rights for his name and number or printable product, which is, you know, his graphics and things like that. That's all sewn up in his Nike deal. But, you know, he signed the direct deal for us to actually make his authentic jerseys, you know, which, you know, looked like, felt like what he'd have worn back in the 90s, you know. Yeah. So that's an amazing opportunity just to have his name established next to the brand alone. You know, but we are a standalone brand, you know, and we've got different leagues and licenses, but these big names attribute back to who we are as premium, legendary, nostalgic, part of our kind of brand principles, you know. So good to, always good to work with, you know, some of the most iconic global stars in the world, you know, and align back to the brand.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm guessing, you know, when a Last Dance comes out, and it has the, you know, the massive impact that that had in terms of viewers and, you know, the modern consumer probably watching a story that they weren't really too familiar with. They might have heard of it, but, you know, they might have heard of Jordan back in the 90s. But, you know, did they really understand, you know, what that Bulls team was all about and how hyped it all was at that time? What kind of impact do those kind of films and docuseries have? You know, does that turn into a genuine opportunity for somebody operating the Michelin Ness brand?
100%. You know, like obviously we've discussed about these hot market opportunities or these moments in time opportunities where things are heightened. You know, the example of that one, Lee, was we were in COVID and that got released.
Yeah.
You know, so really, if you were thinking about the opportunity, it was at a time when people were at home, they were in lockdown, there was more eyes on the TV potentially. And, you know, that was the moment in time where, you know, maybe even really as a company, you know, we pivoted to that moment. You know, we created ranges. We, you know, we looked at the T-shirts that the players were wearing in the series and we brought them to life. The locker room headwear, you know, we brought that to life. You know, like we took our consumers on that journey. True. Around the feeling they had for that documentary, you know. So,
yeah,
I mean, you know, people would say, yeah, you're capitalizing on that moment in time or a feeling. We would say we're recreating that want for the feeling of the product that, you know, the players wore. You know, you watched that and there was just everything about it you could just work off. You could work off, you know, the sayings, or we were watching clips when they were training, or we were looking at what the fans were wearing. We were bringing elements of everything that we could see in that documentary back into the product, you know, which is authentic as you can get.
Yeah.
As we are, that's what we're trying to do, you know. So that was a really interesting time, you know, probably one I wouldn't forget because it was probably one of the busiest times I've ever been, you know. So
I think those brands out there that grew during COVID, and I think that was where, you know, you had visionaries that could pivot. I mean, you had a great opportunity, you know, come up there with the Netflix series, but those brands that were able to kind of not just go through the motions and actually think about, you know, there's a global pandemic here. How do we actually, A, stay afloat, but B, try and do something different as well, you know, because the whole world's changing. I think that's where, not to go off on too much of a COVID tangent, but that's where brands that really knew what they were doing had an opportunity to really change things up. And yeah, great to hear that, you know, you guys were able to kind of...
I think a lot of the buzzword at the time across all the business was pivoting, you know. Everybody was pivoting during that period, you know. So
yeah, I mean, we did the same. I mean, I was at Ipswich Town Football Club at the time, and, you know, none of us were going in and we're all working from kind of solitary confinement. And, you know, we were kind of having those discussions about, you know, what do we do? Our shops are closed, so everything goes online. So, you know, what can we do through online? And the football wasn't happening, so how can we bring that fan association back to our fans? And what ranges can we do? And what offers can we do? And, you know, it was a really interesting time. And actually, we came out of COVID and we had a stronger revenue year than we did the year before, just because we were thinking on our feet.
Amazing. You know, and that's like when you pivot, you know, like you're looking at solutions, looking at new strategies, you know. And yeah, there was probably a little bit more focus on what can we do? How can we overcome it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's actually really interesting that you go down that route again of when you were at Ipswich and, you know, the type of things that you had to do to create revenue. I go back to sport. Now, you know, right now we would say hypothetically, I wouldn't say we're in a downturn, but right now, you know, interest rates are high and consumer spend is, you know, it's a bit tougher.
Sure.
You know, but when it comes to sport, I think there's this thing of, you know, you can always trust your club. You can always trust the feeling that it gives you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why, you know, when you come to a sport product, whether it be in fashion or team apparel or whatnot, yeah, as a fan, you know, like I'm not saying they want to consume, but they always want their new jersey.
Yeah.
You know, they might want to get their child the new jersey or the new kit, or, you know, for our listeners, you know, like there are always opportunities in sport where like they still want to spend their money there. They'll probably still get that soccer shirt and they might not go and get something else because they have to get their soccer shirt. That's their club.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it runs through the bloodline of families, you know. And that's not an advantageous thing. That's just how people feel about their team.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that kind of tribal fanatic, I guess, is probably
100%. And then, you know, for yourself, you know, as a dad, you know, I'm not too sure if you're an Ipswich fan or not, but, you know, you might, you know, now you're talking about nostalgic jerseys. You know, we sell nostalgic swingmans in Jordan for five-year-olds. They've never seen Jordan. They don't know who Jordan is. They've never watched Jordan, but they're going to know about Jordan because either their brother or their uncle or their father, you know, and it's, you know, and you're selling Jordan jerseys to five-year-olds, which is crazy. Yeah, I mean,
that's a new market that you probably didn't anticipate when you first put the line.
So,
in terms of obviously being that nostalgic heritage brand, your moments kind of come later in the players' careers after those moments in time. Are you guys already identifying current players in the game that you feel are going to be your next peak moments in, say, 10, 15 years? Is that how it works?
Yeah, for sure. We were having a good conversation about it the other day about maybe the age of our consumer, you know, whether or not it's the demographics 30 to 45 and what type of players are they looking at? You know, what's that 20 to 30-year-old looking at? Or younger, you know, with LeBron obviously coming up for retirement, you know, what does that mean for the brand? And, you know, how can we curate products around him? And now, again, it might not be the opportunity to get printables rights because he'll be tied up with Nike, but we'll have his jersey rights.
Well,
you know, but then you've got Melo, you know, who's just retired, played at the Knicks and, you know, the Nuggets, you know, we've got his Nuggets jersey, but now we might have access to his Knicks jersey, you know, and we could create a nice story around that, you know. So, you know, we've definitely identified a few. We've had Dwayne Wade. He retired obviously a couple of years ago and we got access to his jersey. You know, he's been interested. You know, we've been getting good sales with him internationally. You know, maybe a different kind of age group, consumer muse group might be buying to him.
Sure.
But, you know, we lost the Pippen rights last year, but he was still one of our best sellers.
Right.
Chicago Bulls, Pippen, up until the time when we lost the license, you know. Vince Carter still seems to sell the best with that iconic, the dinosaur logo that's so iconic with Vince Carter dunk contest, you know.
Yeah.
Toronto Raptors, one of the best logos out there. And all of these clubs, you know, like most of them, or the leagues, they're all kind of celebrating retro rounds.
Yeah.
NBA does a retro round, AFL does a retro round. Not too sure if the Premier League's doing one yet, but sure, they probably should.
Yeah, I'm guessing it's not too far away. Obviously, the clubs do their own versions, but, you know, everything follows a couple of years down the line and it's another commercial opportunity and another commercial entity to raise the profile and talk to different consumer bases. And yeah, can see that coming fairly soon. I guess the final two questions are ones that we tend to ask everybody and everybody has a quite personal answer to them, so it's always nice for our listeners to hear. But the penultimate one is, what's the most challenging part of your role, would you say?
I think it's the constant feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think I'm not too sure if that's a life lesson, but I you know, like, I think head of product role or a PLM role or head of design, you know, like, I think for people that might think, oh, cool, that's cool, you designed that jersey or you got to ideate that jersey, you know, like, it might not be everybody's favorite jersey. And that's just what you've got to live with. Or it could be someone's favorite t-shirt. You know, like, I think the most important thing is to be open and to receive feedback.
Yeah.
You know, it might not fit a certain way. They might want it slimmer or they might want a graphic to be in a different color or they don't like this logo. You know, like, at the end of the day, you know, you try your best to understand all the moving parts, you know, whether or not it's club input, it's sales input, it's marketing input, it's consumer feedback, you know.
Sure.
But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, that's probably the thing that is the journey. You know, it's not necessarily the hardest thing, but I tell you, the hardest thing is to keep everyone happy. Yeah.
There's a lot that comes back after you put something out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And to finish off, what's the best part of your role?
It's just the consumer. It's the consumer and the way that they feel, you know, for me. You know, there's nothing better than seeing something online where someone's posted, this is amazing, or the fire emoji, or, you know, even friends, family, walking down the street, seeing people see things that you might have ideated or not personally designed, but have been part of, you know, that's still probably the biggest kick for me, you know, and hopefully that continues, you know.
Yeah, that fire emoji is the one. When the fire emojis come out, sure, you've smashed it. But no, thanks so much for your time, Robbie. That's been a great insight into, you know, product that we probably all know and probably all recognize, but, you know, getting a bit deeper under the surface into what it actually takes to bring that product to market, both in your local territory and obviously, as you were mentioning, through things like Culture Kings and the disruption, how it actually finds its way back to its native territory, which is, you know, great to kind of just pick over and to kind of understand that a little bit more. Everybody will see this product, you know, everybody sees Mitchell and Ness product, and especially if they're, you know, into their sports merchandise, and they probably don't appreciate the product as much as it needs to be appreciated. So I think you've probably given a really great understanding there in terms of the blood, sweat and tears that goes into most of the collections that you bring to market and what it takes. But no, thank you. Really enjoyed that.
No, I really enjoyed coming on the Sports Merch podcast, and thanks for the invite, and hope the listeners get something out of it.
Yeah, no, you're welcome anytime. You're welcome anytime. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thanks again.
Cheers, thank you. You know what, Matt? I really enjoyed that one. Really enjoyed speaking to Robbie. I mean, I love my American sports, as you'll know anyway, but diving into that conversation around American sports, popular culture, and how that can drive spikes in opportunities for the guys that kind of range products around all of that era. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I thank Robbie for his time, because obviously it was early morning for me and late night for him being on the other side of the world. It's an interesting one to try and do, but really thankful that we found the time to record.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, you see the success of the show like The Last Dance, is no surprise other sports and other sporting organisations are trying to get in on that bandwagon with Netflix and other platforms, isn't it? And, you know, we've obviously spoke about the power of the athlete over the team now and so on, and you kind of see that in their social media followings, but it's interesting to see that that also translates into, you know, the retail and merchandise world as well.
Yeah, I think it's the modern world. I think it's Gen Z. I think, you know, they're more connected to the athletes than they are necessarily the people paying their wages. You know, you've seen that with Ronaldo in Saudi and Messi in America. And, you know, they just take their fan base with them, you know, and the team almost becomes adopted for the fan.
Yep, definitely. And you know, again, going back to Netflix, you saw it recently with the Beckham documentary. He was probably one of the first that really was, you know, player over club or player over organisation. And, you know, so many others have followed in his path, haven't they? And, you know, wouldn't be surprised if someone like a Beckham would be the kind of person that could build that merchandise culture around him as well, with the nostalgia that's around his career.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It's certainly heading that way. And I think we'll see a lot more of it over the coming years, as you say. Things like image rights for players. I think the athletes are starting to really understand that they are the product, not necessarily the sport itself and the game that's been played. The athletes are the products. And, you know, in a way, I respect that. And I think they're right to try and, you know, drive those revenues for themselves. At the end of the day, it's their skill set.
It's their value, isn't it? I guess it's, and it's, you know, we said it before, it's a real short-lived career for them. So, you know, why not try and squeeze the juice where you can and make sure that you are looked after once you finish participating in sport?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, really thoroughly enjoyable episode.
Yeah, great one to start the new season with, for sure. Gets us off on a great footing for the new season ahead.
Absolutely, and we'll be back soon with episode 2. Please join us then.